Good afternoon. My name is Paweł Wieprzowski, and on behalf of WOOD & Company, I would like to welcome you at the call with Kernel to discuss the company's first quarter financial results. The call is attended by the company's management, Andriy Verevsky, the chairman of the board, Anastasia Usachova, CFO, and Yuriy Kowalczuk, corporate investment director. Firstly, we'll start with the short presentation of the results, followed by the Q&A session. Now I would like to give the floor to the management.
Paweł, thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We are glad today present the financial results of the first quarter financial year 19, which is ended in September 2018. Our revenue for the period doubled year to year to $1.1 billion. EBITDA reached $100 million as compared to $46 million year ago, and net profit totaled $76 million. This is more than three times exceeded the results of the same quarter in financial year 18. The financial leverage reduced to 2.5 net debt to EBITDA level from the 2.8 last quarter. The overall operating environment this season is better than a year ago, despite oversupplied soft commodities on the world markets. Keeping the downward pressure on the global prices, Ukraine shall deliver the record harvest of the grain and oil seeds, which is positively affecting our all segments. As we guided on our annual results call in October, EBITDA contribution from sunflower seed oil segment in the first quarter 19 is relatively weak. While sale volume remains flat, 400,000 tons, margin expectedly reduced to $40 per ton of oil sold, reflecting the limited supply of sun seeds at the end of the last season. Accordingly, first quarter of financial year 19, processing volume reduced 23% year to year. Obviously, first quarter results on the sunflower seeds oil business would dilute a stronger performance of the crushing segment expected in the remaining quarters of financial year 19. We confirm our estimation of sun seeds harvest, which is already finished. In Ukraine this year, we should harvest around 16 million tons, translated into the material recovery of margins. We aim to process total 3.1 million as planned, operating all our crushing plants at full capacity utilization until financial year 19. The high sunflower seed supply should enable us to accumulate the solid stock, carry stock for the processing in financial year 20, first quarter financial year 20. Our infrastructure and trading segment posted EBITDA of $38 million, two times higher year to year. We exported 1.4 million tons of grain from Ukraine, 86% up year to year, with recovering profitability. Strong export volumes combined with our consistent efforts in infrastructure debottleneck led to higher year-to-year throughput volumes in our silos and grain export terminals, 12 and 17% respectively. Also important that are very positively contributed and supported our earnings in the first quarter. So moreover, we recognize sizable savings on logistic costs due to our recent investment in rail cars. Having a strong season, we now expected 6.2 million tons of grain export in financial year 19, revising up from 5.4 million tons initially guided. Ukraine will produce 35 million tons of corn, which is 42% up year to year, bringing the total export of grain and oilseeds from Ukraine as estimation historically high of 50 million tons in financial year 19. Obviously, current season will be extremely supportive for our farming business. In the first quarter 19, we reported $53 million US dollars of EBITDA in farming segment, which is 3.2 times higher year to year. We maintain our full year EBITDA conservative guidance over the $160 million. The key tailwinds came from supportive weather conditions, successfully hedging strategy, prompt and smooth integration of the farmland acquired a year ago, along with the constant effort of productivity improvement. This factors allowed us to reach record yields across all spring crops. We remain committed and fully focused on delivery our strategy in 2021. Our investment program is running smoothly without delays and in line with the budget, as we discussed during the annual call. I just reminded again, the total capital deployment this year, including maintenance capex, is estimated $330 million. Last things which I want to communicate from our side, after the internal analysis and discussion, we decided to move to the three-segment reporting instead of six by combining bulk and bottle oil segment into the oil seeds processing segment, and by combining grain, silo service, and export terminal segments into the infrastructure and training segments. All combined segments have a quite similar fundamentals driving their performance, and we believe that the shift to the three segments will substantially simplify understanding of our business and make more comparable to our international peers. We will carry on to report six segments during the whole financial year 19, and start from 2020 we will report the three segments. So that's pretty much it from our side. Please, we're ready for your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now start Q&A session. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. Our first question comes from Nikolai Menteshvili from Insan Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, many thanks for the presentation. Just several questions. First of all, on the crushing margin, you mentioned it's $40 per ton in the first quarter. On the last call, it was guided that part of the tons were the zero margin ones from the previous inventory that you're crushing. If we exclude these zero margin tons, what's the current kind of market crushing margin? Is it also at $40 per ton?
So thanks for the question. That's absolutely correct. We during the last call and annual call, we state about the first quarter margin zero. I just would like to clarify that. So $40, this is the mixed margin together with the bottle oil. So if you mix with the bottle oil, it will bring a margin on a bulk oil down to $35 or $34. But also what was misunderstanding from my side is we sold in the first quarter more expensive, we executed more expensive contracts on a sand mill, so which brought the margins higher. But we will execute the contracts from the lower price of the sand mill in the second quarter and third quarter. So overall, I would say it will be pretty much the same results going forward for the second, third, and fourth quarter. As I discussed on an annual call, and I can confirm it again, at the moment we are working with the current mark-to-market margin around $80-$85, but which will definitely average down for the whole year because of the first quarter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So second, third, and fourth quarter, you said should be similar to first quarter?
I would say if you, maybe it's better if I give you like a guidance. We see margins, if nothing will change, we see margins around $65-$66 maybe dollars per ton of oil.
Okay.
Overall, during the whole financial year 19.
All right.
Once again, we're still far away because we only on the half of the season. Still lots of things can happen, but we see the supply and demand pretty good balance. We see lots of inventories at the farmer's possession. So we believe we have a good chance to maintain good margins and get the good average.
Okay. Is 65 I kind of...
For the total volume, for the total volume of the bulk oil for the whole financial year 19.
Okay, fine, all right. And then another one I wanted to ask, given the high increase in the activity in trading and Aver business, I think it brought a lot of sales as well, sales increases. Do you how do you manage that business so it doesn't take too much kind of excessive trading risks? And what are basically the KPIs you look at and the restrictions you give to traders in terms of that?
So, first of all, you're absolutely right. Avera was very active in the first quarter in terms of physical trade, which is a little bit unusual. We don't expect the same volume traded in a following quarter, so first of all. Once you look at the high volume of trading in a physical trade, it's not necessarily corresponding to the big risk. So they're pretty much trading papers in and out, and the risk envelope which we gave to Avera doesn't change because of volume. So that's why I don't think we look at Avera from the volume perspective. We're looking mainly from the risk perspective. So sometimes you can see the high volume traded, but not necessarily the risk is going up.
Okay, okay. And the last one, I think it's proposed to change the reporting segments for the company going forward. What's the driver for that decision? Is it to kind of align internally, or has it been a guidance from equity or from shareholders or equity holders?
I think it's kind of both. First of all, I think the main reason is obviously business decision. First of all, if you look at the oil business, the bottle oil is pretty small, and anyway, the purchasing price is the same, and I think it's a little bit more headache. If we divided this, we decided to combine the for oilseeds process segment. In terms of infrastructure and trading segment, we're more and more looking at the margins across the whole chain of the business, starting from silos, grain trading, procurement, and terminal, because it's not always possible to trade with the positive margins, but we also looking at infrastructure utilization where we make pretty much stable margins. So sometimes we decide we go and trade and buy from farmers with back-to-back zero margins, but we utilize our infrastructure system. Silos and port silos, which anyway makes sense and we make money. So that's why we start to look at this business as a whole chain and the profitability as a whole chain. That's why we decided to combine into the one segment, and the farming is obviously remain the same.
Okay, that's all for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Alexander Ayub from Waha Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for the presentation and congratulations for the good results. Three questions from my side. First, on the CapEx. So I think you're spending significant CapEx, growth CapEx this year, $330 million. How much of that could be postponed to the following years if there are some challenges happening this year? How much is committed?
Okay, answer your question. Practically, we can potentially postpone something on the next financial year, but unfortunately, this investment, which is we done, we committed pretty much for all of them. We can probably delay or something, you know, like extend the period, but practically, contracts are signed with constructors, with the equipment producers, and everything is working on the way. So I don't think it's practically possible. If you're referring to the, I mean, political situation and stuff, it will be very tough to prolong it. So I guess we are committed.
Okay. And just to see, so on, still on the CapEx, so I think you have like a $550 million CapEx program. So
yeah.
I think in Q4 last year you spent $100 million. Now this year you're planning to spend $330 million. Does it mean you only have like around $100 million left for the following year?
I guess a little bit more. Let me check 1 second. CapEx. For the next year, we plan 165 CapEx for financial year 2020. That excludes the maintenance CapEx of $44 million, so overall $200 million, including maintenance CapEx.
Okay, got it. So then.
And this is 330 million, including maintenance capex and the investments into the agribusiness. So minus 86, so 242 million pure capex.
Thanks a lot. That's very clear. Moving on to the next topic, just on the EBITDA. So I think like last year EBITDA was around 220, 230. It was a weak year. This year you gave some guidance, which I mean makes us comfortable that hopefully EBITDA would be higher than 300, maybe 350, but still that's not sufficient to finance the capex. So what kind of how will you finance this this cash gap?
I think it's like we're not financing the capex with all our cash. We obtain for the long term 10 years long term credit lines from the banks. So I guess we're pretty much fine with the financing situation to finance our capex for this and next year.
Okay, sorry, that's very interesting. So you mentioned so 7 to 10 year. Financing facilities? Is it like ECA type facilities? Because
maybe Anastasia better comment on that. Anastasia, can you comment on that, please?
Yeah, we are finalizing documentation actually to sign relatively soon. You are right. This is with one international organization, not the commercial bank.
So development banks, correct? And could you give us an indication of size? Is it like $200, $300 million?
This is a facility of $250 million.
Sorry, can you say it again? I missed the number.
$250 million.
From
one big organization and several lines from other.
Okay, fantastic. And then... Just so, okay, great, in relation to how you will finance that CapEx. Then just to kind of get a better feel about what kind of leverage you are comfortable with running the business. So I think the leverage is currently around 2.5 times and 1 time inventory adjusted. You're on a growth phase. Where do you think this level can go to?
So,
where could you stretch them to under this growth strategy?
We believe that our normal level of leverage would be around 2 times EV/EBITDA. That's the level we are comfortable with. Obviously,
sorry,
with this,
debt to EBITDA?
Net debt to EBITDA, sorry.
Okay.
So 2 times. Obviously, we're in a period of a high CapEx program for financial year 19 and 20. And everything will depend, of course, on operating and EBITDA EBITDA numbers. But we believe that 2.5, that's the maximum which we will stay during this 2 years. And I hope 2020 will reduce substantially the leverage. But on the normal course of business, we would like to stay just under 2. This is our management target.
Fantastic. And I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I understood correctly. You said 2.5 is the maximum. However, I think you have been above 2.5 over the last few quarters.
We've been above, yes, yeah, that's true. But once again, just because we're running in 19 and 20 high capital expenditures program. So that's why if we slide down a little bit on EBITDA, of course, our leverage can jump a little bit. But this is the capex the extensive capex only for the 2 years, 19 and 20. But if you're asking me just what is my target and how I would like to run the business, our target is around 2 times. That's where we see our leverage.
Fantastic. And sorry, just on this point, is it fair to say that you will try to contain the leverage below 3 times? Within this growth phase, hopefully by delaying capex, if there are some challenges like weaker harvest season,
I can tell you that I have a strong understanding and visibility that we should not exceed 2.5 this year, financial year 19, and if nothing happened next year and a crop is good and everything is more or less normal, I think next year should not be more than 2.5 either. So. And we're not that much concerned about leverage going forward for the 19 and 20.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Sergey Dubin from Harding Loebner. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Congratulations on the results. Three questions from me. The first is, I know you mentioned that in earlier part of the call, but I'm still unclear as to why, if you're talking about $80 to $85 crushing margin that you see in the market, why is that your own margin is going to be $60 to $65 for the rest of the year? I understand the point about zero margin in Q1, but why would that persist in Q2 through Q4 so that your overall
If you take the volume of the first quarter, 380,000, giving uh-huh. the zero margins, and take the whole volume that's averaged down.
Gotcha. So essentially, it's just a mathematical calculation, right? But
your realized
margin is going to be right. Okay. So your realized margin in Q2 through Q4 would be 80 to 85, but because of math, it just works out to blend to 65 or whatever, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay, great. The second question on the infrastructure side, it looks like you're saying that, this year there's more bigger harvest, and you mentioned that you exported 1.4 million tons of grain, which is 86% year-on-year growth. But then when you look at your, the grain trading, obviously, EBITDA has done well, but part of it is from there. But, the export terminals and silos has actually declined year-on-year. Like, why is that? If you're processing more, if you basically have more harvest, and you're processing more stuff, why is your profitability goes down?
The profitability goes down just because of the more capacity on the market, and they're putting a little bit of pressure on throughput fees. And once we're doing this, we obviously put in the market fees as well, despite 80% of the... 50% we're doing from our farming operation, but we're still pricing the service from the terminal to the farming at the market price. So we see the market price on the throughput is slightly down compared to the last year. That's why our profitability is slightly lower.
And who is putting – you're talking about the terminal and the
new capacity? New capacity on the
right.
market, and that's why. So.
And who is adding that? Who are the companies that add the capacity?
I mean, multinationals are commissioning their ports on 100% this year. For example, Bunge didn't operate last year full capacity. We have Dreyfus building a new terminal, and I guess ADM is also increasing a little bit. Cargill with joint venture also doing some new capacity. So overall, everyone is adding a little bit, which is putting pressure.
Right, and is that
also local Ukrainian? Like they also increasing a little bit.
Okay, would you say that these trends in Q1 that you've seen, is the capacity mostly the capacity build up is mostly over and it's going to be stable, or it continues throughout the fiscal year?
For the financial year, for financial year 19, we see these margins pretty stable, which we mm-hmm. posted. I guess silos will be higher than first quarter, but for terminal margin, will be more or less stable, though mm-hmm. volume will be higher. But for 2020, we have to see it, because that will depend on the crop size.
Okay, and also regarding so you're saying that in January 2019 you're going to launch the transshipment terminal, 1 million ton capacity. So that particular launch, how much of incremental EBITDA can it add for you guys for this fiscal year?
But we plan 4 million tons new capacity in autumn 19 financial 2019. Yeah, take the margins from the first quarter, and that's where you will get the incremental contribution.
Okay. So 1 million comes in January, and then another three comes
in autumn 19.
Okay, fall of 2019. Okay, so and I should take your export terminal margin of $8 per ton, roughly speaking, right?
Yeah, something like this, yeah.
Okay, plus understood. And then last question on the farming side, obviously it's done extremely well. How much of that, so, you know, you basically tripled your EBITDA for the quarter. How much of that came from increase in acreage, and how much of that came from just better crop yields or other factors?
I would say the major tailwind is from the yields. The growth yield is pretty high. If you looked at the numbers and the products, corn is done extremely well, and sun seeds and soybeans as well. Wheat is a bit less, but still growth. So that's the main. That's the main, obviously, reason. Also, I guess we were pretty successful with hedging strategy. We sold almost 50% of the corn before the harvest started, and with the higher level than today. We also sold sun seeds pretty much through the oil well before sun seeds started, so on a way better level than its markets today. And that's pretty much the main impact to the results.
Okay, so would it be fair to say that since you sold most of the crop up front, you pretty much locked in the profit for the farming
segment?
Not whole,
but I would say more than 50%, yes.
More than 50% locked in, okay.
Yeah, and I mean, we were lucky with the prices because prices went down since we sold it, so, I mean, generally it was the right move. It could have been vice versa, obviously, so you never know.
Yeah. And just for my own understanding, can you tell me just quickly, if you remember, how much land did you buy from these? I think there's like two assets that you bought, Ukr Agri or something.
Yeah.
It's about 200,000 hectares, right?
Yeah, I think it was up to 200, and we divested around 50. So I might mistake maybe 5,000-10,000, but something like that.
Okay. So net about 150. Okay.
I guess maybe, something like that.
Okay. And then last question. I think I know the answer, but just to ask it anyway, just to make sure. So the recent, problems that Ukraine had with Russia in the Kerch Strait, that obviously has no impact on you because Chernomorsk is in Black Sea, in Odessa, in Chernomorsk ports. So essentially, there is no way that the Russians, for example, can block off the entire Black Sea for you guys, right? So you don't see any risk for the shipments of any kind that can arise there, as far as you're concerned.
Straightly answer your question, no, we don't have any risks today with the Black Sea, with the vessels and stuff, and I would look at the situation slightly a bit more than particularly this one, and we don't see this situation and this accident as the big intention, which brings big tension between two countries, and I think it's more accident than escalation of the conflict overall, and I hope it will stay like this. And maybe some politician would like to bring it in a different level, but I hope it will not be the case, and it will just remain the accident which took place, and which is not good, of course, and no one like it. But I hope the escalation will be calm. And
okay, very good. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Jiri Fidler from Terra Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for this presentation. I have a few questions. First of all, perhaps hard to say, but what is roughly the current potential to expand the crop yields further? I mean per hectare. They are well above the Ukrainian averages, but let's say as compared to the best or the highest yields achieved around the globe, what's the difference still of kernel production within the farming segment and the best ones around the globe, let's say?
Thank you for your question.
If you have, if you know, it's just a guess or, you know.
No, we still believe that obviously this crop is pretty high and the general and average yields are quite high and reaching records. I still believe we have a potential to grow, to grow and have the higher yields, especially for the corn and for the wheat. Obviously, sun seeds is reaching pretty much the peak. We believe that there's not much upside left for the sun seeds. But also, if we compare it to United States, for example, crop production, it's not that easy to compare because, and or soybeans, for example, because they use the GMO soybean seeds, which is obviously more resilient and more productive than the non-GMO, for example, seeds in Ukraine. So it's difficult compare directly. But coming back to Ukraine, I guess Ukraine generally has a potential to improve the yields because not all farmers are running the business in an optimal way. Kernel has a little bit of potential, but I think maybe 10-15% potential in the corn and wheat. Sun seeds maybe 10%. I don't know, but it's tough to say. Mm-hmm. I would say today yields are pretty high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. Very good. Yeah, great. Thanks a lot. Next one. That 28% drop in cell services EBITDA. It was actually explained by the large capacity in the market, as you said. Next one. Does ever trading focus solely on the deliverable contracts? Because as someone alluded a few minutes ago, it seems like the company takes on positions that are not covered. In other words, there are also, I don't know, 70 or more than 70 million other current assets that are related to the derivative trading, 17 million. By the way, how much out of the total within other operating income, there is $17 million, and it's mostly attributable to other derivative trading. Can you tell me what is the specific amount out of those $17 million?
So I just didn't get your question. Can you say again, please?
Yes. First of all, does Avere Trading focus solely on deliverable contracts? If these contracts are covered, if you have the commodity before you sell it, or if there are any, let's say, speculative open positions.
Avere Trading so many instruments. It's different contracts conditions. Just a question of the, it always comes down to the question of the market risk, counterparty risks, and the risk envelope and the risk amount which they allow to take. And that's it. I mean,
okay,
we can discuss obviously deliver the conditions of the contract, but there's so many of them. They're trading paper, they're trading FOB, they're trading cost of freight, they trade so many contracts.
Yeah, but the point is, if all these contracts are deliverable, in other words, if Avere takes on a contract to deliver or to sell, I don't know, 100,000 tons of wheat, and you have the wheat physically, or if there are also some open contracts that are not covered by your production.
Not necessarily they're having wheat.
It's not,
they have a first, okay, they have a first, they have a first counterparty, first-class counterparty on the other side, which has to deliver the wheat under certain conditions. So it's not always they have a wheat. They have a contract, cover contract with price and delivery and counterparty.
All right. So there is no chance other trading would open a speculative position on any commodity.
They have their positions on the commodity, but just limited by
speculative.
Size.
Let's speculative positions. Speculative positions
they,
which are not
of course
covered.
They do have. Of course they do have speculative positions. They're just limited by the size and by the volume of the risks.
All right. And can you tell me out of the total 17 million other operating income, what amount is attributable to other trading?
Anastasia, can you comment on that, please?
Yes. Honestly speaking, I don't remember the exact number of our contribution, but yeah, it's like the largest part of this amount came from Avera.
Mostly, yeah. So let's say, I don't know, 13, 14, 15 or something like that could be attributable to Avera, right? But it's not that important. More importantly, were these, let's say, gains or was this income realized or unrealized? From the accounting point of view, you know, how it was accounted for. Was there any change in cash related to these transactions, or it's just a gain that is temporary and will, of course, change in the future, you know?
Yeah, as you know, in P&L, you always see portion realized and then realized profit. So this is attributable to both parts, realized and unrealized.
And is it roughly half realized and half unrealized, or is it mostly unrealized? Don't you have a, let's say, a bit closer information on this?
cannot say at the moment, but
Can I send you, would it be possible to send you those questions, and would you be so kind and reply to that email? I would send.
Yes, of course.
After
we'll
this
do.
Call. Okay. So, all right. So that's it from my side. So,
thank you.
Thank you for the presentation and congratulations on the first quarter results.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Yule Di Mambro from Federated Investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for the presentation. I have three questions, please. My first question is on your trade receivables. Could you please give us a bit more color on what was behind the quite material increase in the quarter? And it seems that the number of receivable days has increased quite a lot as well, back to 2014 level. At what point do you expect that to reverse?
Anastasia, can you please comment on that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We increased our level of our activity in grain business and also in international trade from our side, and that's the main reason for growth in account receivables. You can also see relative growth in account payable also attributed to both actually grain business and our operation.
And do you expect this sort of level of day receivables to carry on for the rest of the fiscal year?
Most probably.
But it will depend on how much volume a variable trades physically. We're expecting the volume will go slightly down. And, for example, for second quarter, they are less active because market doesn't give the opportunity. So, and if they will produce less volume, obviously receivables will be less as well.
Yeah, but historically our receivables were at level of, let's say, 100 million. So most probably you will see a little bit higher level this year.
Understood. Thank you. My second question is on your debt maintenance covenants. If I recall correctly, you had to seek a waiver for the last financial year, and as far as I remember, they were at 2.5 times level. Are you maintaining them at 2.5 times, or are you going to need to seek a waiver again this year?
We actually changed the level of net debt to EBITDA in our facilities, so 2.5 is not longer the level.
And what's the level now?
It's more than 3.
Understood. And it's still tested once a year, or is it tested twice a year?
Yes, and end of the financial year.
Great. And then my final question is on your EBITDA guidance and on the leverage guidance that you gave earlier on the call, the 2.5 times net leverage. Do you assume any more fair value gains on biological assets in those numbers?
Anastasia, would you comment?
Yeah. In any case, we have to apply international financial statements, and we have to apply IAS 41, so you will see revaluations of biological assets. We have to do this, and this gain or loss is included in EBITDA.
For the end of the year guidance, are you assuming more gains or losses from the current level?
We cannot say today, because it depends on our expectation on yields and also on prices, on commodity prices. So we cannot say now. But normally should be plus minus neutral result. But again, today it's too early.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Pavel from Wood & Co. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon again. Thank you for the presentation and so far answers. The connection was pretty bad, so if you don't mind, would you be so kind and repeat the CapEx guidance for this year and the next one? That's my first question. And the second question, could you please elaborate a bit more on the debt maintenance covenant? To be more specific, you've mentioned just that the covenant that at the current moment there are above 3.0, and what's the current covenant against which these levels will be tested at end of this financial year? Thank you.
So for the CapEx, once again, financial year 19 is a $330 million, including maintenance CapEx in investments in agribusiness, which we have to do with linked to our acquisition last year. And financial year 20 is a $200 million, including maintenance CapEx. And for the debt covenants, Anastasia, please.
So your question is, what is the level for 30th of June 2009? Or, sorry, would you please repeat the question?
2019.
Yes. So
2019. Yeah.
What is the current level of the covenant? Because you've mentioned that you have this level at three, slightly above 3.0. So what is your covenant for this year against which it will be tested? And that's the question.
Yeah, the current level is three something. I don't really remember, 3.3 or 3.5. I honestly speaking don't remember. The current level is 2.5, even as of 30th of September 2018, which is significantly below. So we have room. We believe we're absolutely fine with the level.
Okay, thank you.
And this covenant is tested as of 30th of June.
Clear, thank you.
Our next question comes from Victorio Bila from Kairos. Please go ahead.
Hi, hello everybody. Just one question. On your CapEx on
in power generation, cogeneration plants on your crushing plants. Can you give some more details in terms of how much would you spend? What is the level of how many megawatts do you want to install? And also what could be the EBITDA contribution and also the timing of this investment? Thank you very much.
So the timing of investments, so we've done already $12 million in financial year 18. Financial year 19, we plan to invest $86 million. And financial year 2020, it's another 50, plus around $35 million is including into the new crushing plant, which we're building on the western part. So overall, it's going to be 150 plus, including this plant, around $170 million. So total EBITDA contribution from all this, all plants and including new plants, should be around $100 million. Maybe, sorry, 95 or something.
Sorry, 95 million is the net EBITDA contribution of this investment.
Yeah. Once all is completed.
Okay, so 2021.
21, yes, exactly.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Marcin Nowak from Ipopema. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I would like to return to the comment about pre-selling sunseed from your own farming business to the sunflower segments. Could you please comment on which exact moment did you pre-sell them?
I don't remember a date, honestly speaking, but we sold oil and meal based on our farming production, I guess April, May, something like this. Maybe
okay,
June.
So it seems that you pre-sold those your own volumes almost at the peak domestic price.
Depends what you call peak.
Okay. Could you comment on the procuring strategy for the outside volumes of sunflower seed?
You mean coverage of sun seeds right now?
Yes. Yes.
I guess we are approaching 65%, maybe, 65% coverage. Especially this year, we not in a hurry much. We believe that there's an even chance that margin could potentially improve at the end of the year because farmers who hold the sun seeds, they would have to sell it anyway before the new year. So, and the volume is there, so that's why we're not really hurry up for chasing farmers to buy sun seeds. So we believe it's enough sun seeds this year, so that's why I think the coverage is just right.
Okay, and
as a strategy for this year.
Are you satisfied more or less with the average price of outside sun seed acquired in this season? In relation to current price, current market ex-works price.
I don't have this information right now. I mean, you want the average price sun seeds bought from the beginning, or
more or less, yes.
Yeah, we will send the information by email. I don't have it in front of me. The price is going up and down. I'm more focusing on margins rather than prices.
Sure. And the second question, will those biomass burning projects, the green projects, contribute any EBITDA this financial year?
This year, very small. I guess maybe 3 or 4 million, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Sergei Dubin for Harding Loevner. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just to clarify one thing, when you said sunseed coverage at 65%, you mean you secured 65% of your total sunseed some seed need for the
exactly.
Fiscal year. Okay, so you have to buy another 35, but you're waiting because you think the margin could be better.
It's not what we're waiting. We're buying every day. Just a question how aggressively we would like to buy. So we don't buy super aggressively at the moment.
Okay, gotcha.
Because if we would buy aggressively right now, we would have to squeeze the margin again. So we don't want that.
Right. Understood. And as far as you know, the capacity, the crushing capacity is stable at, I think, something like 17 million tons, right? It's not increasing.
Yeah,
17.5.
So that's the crushing, sun seed crushing capacity we're working with.
Right. And it's not changing.
We don't see any project. Our project is coming next year, 1 million. Next year, sorry, 2021, but it's 1 million. But we don't see any others at the moment.
Okay, understood. That's fine. And another quick one on more broader stuff. So given the elections next year in Ukraine, is there any concern that you have regarding, you know, could there be anything that, you know, directly to your business that could be, like, for example, can they accelerate the land reform, or is that not as likely, and what's the implication for Kernel? It doesn't mean that you're going to have to buy land and spend more CapEx. I mean, is there any risk of that, or is that sort of on the back burner at the moment?
We even if they lift up the moratorium in 2020 or 19 calendar year, we don't see there's going to be lots of land available on the market. I don't think the population will sell it super fast. But even if the wave of 10-15% will be on the market, I think we have enough capacity to acquire it if this is will be the case.
And just to understand, so you currently have these long-term leases, right, on the land. So let's say if you have 10-year lease, and you're, you know, 3 years into it, the fake argument, so there's 7 years remaining, and the land reform comes through, and then the owner says, I want to sell the land, does it mean that they would have to break this lease? Or you can say basically
Lease will stay. Lease agreement will stay according to the contract. It might be another buyer always who will buy the land and receiving the yields, because we're paying at the moment a certain amount of money per hectare, which is depends on the price of the land, will represent certain yields on the to the buyer. So it will all depend on the price. I can give you example. For example, right now, average price we pay per hectare is around $120, maybe $140dollars per hectare. And now you make the calculation. If the asking price around $2,000 per hectare, per hectare, this is your yield. And do you want to buy as investor this land and waiting 7 years to having these yields? This is the trade-off.
Okay, I see. So essentially, you're going to be saying it is better for us to pay, quote-unquote, rent of 140 per hectare.
No, honestly, our strategy is if the price is more or less good, we would like to proceed to acquire the land, not to let the owners to sell to third party and using our right of first refusal to buy the land. If the prices will be extremely high, we not necessarily want to buy it because it all depends on the calculation. You understand what I mean?
Sure, but if the price is attractive, and you say you don't think you'd be buying more than 10 or 15% of your land bank, right?
It's not what I would buy. It's just what I believe will be on the market. I don't think people will rush to sell.
Okay, but then would that mean some CapEx acceleration, right? Because you need the money to
yeah,
buy
but you it. you can make the calculation. We have 530,000 hectares. Take 10-15%. You end up with 75,000 hectares. Multiply 2,000 or 1,500. This is amount of money which we have to spend. I don't see the big problem with that.
Okay, understood. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Eva Pugacinska from Polska Press Agency. Please go ahead.
Hello, everybody. Do you hear me?
Yes.
I would like to come back to political situation because Russia put has put Kernel on the list of companies subject to sanction. Could you comment this? If it will have any impact on your business?
Thank you for your question. Yes, that's right. The Russian Federation put me personally and the CEO and the Kernel itself on the list. We don't see the big impact. At the moment, we don't do the big Russian operation. We lease our part of the shares to the Glencore for the throughput, for the take-or-pay agreement. We hope and we believe that we have a good chance to extend this agreement for the next couple of years. So we were receiving last year and this year $8 million for our quarter. And I guess we have a good chance to extend this agreement for next year. So answer your question, we will not have material effect from this sanction.
Okay, and the last question is, do you will have any problems with export grain by sea connected to this situation?
We don't sell anything to Russia, so that's not an issue at all.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on a telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. Our next question comes from Will Jetman. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, thanks very much. Great results. I wanted to just go back to the leverage covenants in the bank facilities. You said that it was around about 3.3, maybe 3.5 times on a net basis. Can I just ask, you said that was from 30th of June this year, right?
Yes.
Yes, for both actually, for 30th of June 2018 and for 30th of June 2019.
Okay, does it step down at any point? And when does the facility mature?
Yes, we have certain schedule. It goes back to 2.5 in 4 years.
In 4 years, okay. Are there any other covenants relating to that in terms of maybe interest coverage or something like that?
We have... it's like interest coverage ratio, something close to this in our bonds, which is 3 times, and we have significant room there.
Okay, thank you. And the other question was relating to the trading activities, just going back to what you were commenting on earlier on. You mentioned that it's not really an issue of volumes, it's more about it's regulated by the issue of risk that's being traded. So how do you guys measure risk?
Obviously, there's several things. We have a VAR, which every trader has, and the combined, the whole company has. We also have a limit of drawdown limits on each trader. That's the, as well, we have approval of counterparties and the certain risk limits on each counterparties. So I would say it's a component of the several points how we measure the risks, not only
okay.
One.
Just one thing to thank you. That's very good. One thing to clarify: the Glencore agreement is $8 million a year. Is that right?
Yes.
And that you're going to be looking to renegotiate. I mean, similar sort of terms going forward. I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? If you had the opportunity to sell the asset, is that still something that's on the table, or is that now? Would you wait for maybe a better time to do that?
For the right price, why not? But I don't think we have it at the moment on the table.
Okay. And so what would the right price ballpark be?
Can I? I would.
I'll email you.
Comment on that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Jakub Kopek from M Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I've got a very short question. Do you have any exposition on the Russian bank? Does any Russian bank lend you money? I remember that historically there was a situation that some banks they were lending you some money. And do you afraid that maybe because of those sanctions, some of those banks they will limit their exposition on your balance sheet?
Yeah, thank you for your question. We don't have even Ukrainian banks in our portfolio. And yes, you're right. We had a few years back, not few years, I don't even remember how long, but we had some credit lines with the Russian banks, VTB, but it was paid back and closed the relationship since many years.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. We have no other questions, dear speakers. Back to you for the conclusion.
Thank you very much for all your questions. I hope we covered most of them. If we did not answer fully your questions, don't hesitate to send us email, and we definitely will revert to you with the more details explanation. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our conference call. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.